Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. With Mobile's award-winning garden expert and chief horticultural advisor for Mobile Botanical Gardens, Bill Finch. We'll talk about living and growing on the Gulf Coast. Now, your personal yard and garden consultant, here's Bill Finch.
Hey, it's a Gulf Coast Sunday morning. Hope you folks are doing well. You know, there's a little bit of vibration that's just beginning. It's just beginning. I can feel it somewhere. It's probably starting somewhere around my big toe, and it's beginning to work its way up. It's going to work its way up, and I've got about 2 weeks, 2 weeks before this vibration just takes over my whole body. It's this season thing, you know? It's the spring season, and it's just about here. And we try to warn you about it. And in part, I try to warn you about it because it's like you gotta watch out for me when this thing happens. Because it's like I got a caffeine buzz. It's like I can't stop. It's amazing what happens when spring comes and how it affects me and what it does to me. You know, it's a good thing to think about this thing, these seasonal changes that we go through. They're very real. It's funny because I'm thinking people who tell me, oh, Mobile doesn't have seasons. They'd say the same things if they were in Detroit. You know, here it is. We don't experience seasons anymore. We live inside our houses where it's, you know, 78 degrees, whatever temperature you keep it at. The only variation is between winter and summer. You will keep it at 78 degrees during the winter and at 68 degrees during the summer, for whatever reason. But we don't really experience these changes in seasons. We don't really understand what happens the way we used to. But if you garden, you still experience them. And it's important to know this, not just because this buzz, it's like it's preparing me for something. It's preparing me for the work I need to do in the garden, I think, and the things I need to see in nature. It's like it's an old thing that's there all along, and it's preparing me once it gets those little signals that it's changing. But it's not just that it's good for you as a gardener. You know, it may be that these seasonal changes and experiencing them may be good for us as people. It may change the way we are as people. You know, here's the funny part. Every season has an effect on me. Every season I think about things, and you know what? I think about them in different ways than I did in the previous season. And I'm not talking about just gardens. I'm not talking about just the way I look at birds. I'm talking about the way I think changes with the seasons. This is crazy. I know this is crazy, and it's new. I know it's new, but it's true, and there's actually a lot of scientific research that's showing this. Back in January, the very cold day in January, it was one of those colder days. It's probably the coldest and driest day we've had. And suddenly my mind was just on fire. It was like it was this transition from warm to suddenly and muggy to suddenly this cold and dry temperatures. It was absolutely amazing. Absolutely amazing. And suddenly, I could think like I hadn't been able to think before. I had all kind of incredible thoughts about, oh, well, here's what I need to do here. And here's what my concentration was right on. And as it turns out, there's a lot of good scientific research that shows that when there are changes like that in seasons, some seasons help you to concentrate. It helps to make you more aware. It helps your body to turn on in ways that you hadn't even anticipated. I think I can talk about this. You know, one of the interesting things is that this thing called fertility. It changes from seasons to season. We've almost lost track of it because we have a lot more controls over fertility than we used to, but it's worth thinking about, you know, animals, deer. You know deer, right? And there's this thing called the rut every fall, and they're all involved in it because it's a very important seasonal thing. This happens seasonally. Our bodies respond to seasons in really important ways. And sometimes I think we've tried to even out the seasons. We've tried to make our lives a space capsule so that we don't never get too cold in our houses, and we never get too hot in our houses, and the humidity is the same as best we can all year long. But and so we completely isolate ourselves from these changes in seasons. And I think in doing that, we've deprived our bodies of something that our bodies grew up with, that our bodies have needed ever since we sprouted legs and arms. It's this funny thing, this adjustment to the seasons. I'm vibrating right now. I'm vibrating. That means, as it works its way up from my ankles, up my leg, up into my chest, up into my head, it means that spring is on its way. And it's a wonderful thing to do. Get out and enjoy this weather. Enjoy this transition. Open yourself up to it. Open yourself up to the temperatures and to the seasons. You know, there's a lot of cool things that are happening. They're already beginning to happen. The mist of Mardi Gras. Yes, it's rising. It's one of those seasonal changes that occur here on the Gulf Coast when the temperature is just right. Not too hot, not too cold. Just right, and there's a relationship between the temperature in the water and the temperature on the land. Everything is just right. It's all just right for these mists to form, and it's beginning to happen, and it's going to happen a lot now going into February. And February 15th, folks, it's the beginning of our spring. It's when spring starts here on the Gulf Coast. So you're going to see that happening, and you're going to see those mists rising, the mist of Mardi Gras, and it's going to make you feel different if you open yourself up to it. It's going to make you think different. It's the way our bodies are. It's the way they respond. Hey, we're going to be thinking about a lot of things. As spring comes on, there's lots to do, lots you're going to have to be working on. So we're going to figure all that out. If you've got questions about what you need to be doing, what you need to be doing as spring comes on and as you feel that little bit of vibration, you give us a call this morning, 251-343-0106, 251-343-0106, and we're going to talk about it. There's lots to do, lots to do. I've already got people's itty-bitty pictures. They're on the ball, man. They got tomatoes coming up. They got peppers coming up. Dan, those look beautiful. Dan sent me some great pictures of his tomatoes and peppers and other things coming up. And it's time for you. It's time for you to begin thinking about these things too. It's that important spring season. We tend to miss it on the Gulf Coast because we listen for somebody in New York to tell us when spring starts, but it's coming up. February 15th, maybe as things warm, it may come even sooner, but we're about at February 15th now as when spring starts here on the Gulf Coast. So let's begin thinking about it. Let's talk about it. And you feel free to give us a call. We'll help you out this morning. 251-343-0106. We're also going to be talking a lot more about trees this morning. And some of the issues we've got in managing our trees here along the Gulf Coast, and about some of the problems that are affecting those trees. Some very interesting things that are happening now. Some things we're beginning to understand as we ship things around the globe. There's a lot more dangers to some of our favorite things like trees. So we'll be dealing with all those this morning. So feel free to give us a call. 251-343-0106, 251-343-0106. Meanwhile, get prepared to step outside today. Enjoy your yard. This is the time. The weather's going to feel good. It's going to be a nice day to be out. If we can beat the rain, Go ahead and do it. Looks like we're going to have a little bit more rain coming in this coming week. That's a great. Going to have a lot of fog. That's going to be nice to look at. The mist of Mardi Gras.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Hey, welcome back. It's a Gulf Coast Sunday morning with Plain Gardening. Hope you're doing well. I got a message this morning from a friend of mine who watches what I do very carefully every Sunday, and he says, "Tell us about these slap out roses." And I'm thinking, well, I don't know. And there may be a slap out rose that I'm aware of. I think maybe he was making fun and meaning knockout roses. It's an interesting thing, knockout roses. We get a lot of calls about them. And the reason we do is because there's almost, now it is the dominant rose everywhere you go in gardens. It's really quite phenomenal. Everybody's got a knockout rose. They were described as the carefree roses, the roses nobody had to think about or take care of. And so naturally people are always asking me, well, how do I take care of them? Well, I guess if you have to ask how to take care of them, you miss the point of the rose. And if you have to take care of them, if there's some problem with these roses, man, there is an issue, because the chief virtue of these roses is nobody has to think about them. That is the chief virtue. They're all kind of the same color. There's only one color that really does well along the Gulf Coast. It's that, I don't know how to describe that color. It's, you know, it's that color. It's that knockout rose color that everybody has. It's the rose color you see everywhere. We used to have a lot of different colored roses. Not anymore. It's all the same knockout rose color. And so the question is, what do you do about taking care of knockout roses? Well, here's the problem. We've got a new issue with knockout roses, and it's rose rosette disease. And I think it's beginning to show up more and more. And my guess is that one of the reasons I hear more people talk about how do I take care of my rock knockout rose, which is a question you shouldn't have to ask, because it's a plastic rose for all practical purposes in terms of taking care of it. I mean, nothing ever, it just sits there and does its thing, never changes from day to day. What's happened is that rose rosette disease is beginning to affect this rose and a number of others pretty badly. And there's not an easy fix to rose rosette disease. I mean, I suppose there is a treatment in a way, but it's a virus. This is a virus, and it's spread by a little tiny mite, and the mites can come in from anywhere. And the problem is there's no effective way to stop that from happening. Once you get a virus, it's very hard to control. It's very hard to control. And here's the other problem. Here's the other problem. You can't, if the people who have planted these roses because they don't require care, they're not going to, even if there were a way, the kind of extravagant extra care that would be required to take care of these roses, they're just not going to invest. Now, some of you are going to have great fun with your knockout roses. They're going to be fine. You're not going to have to ever think about them. You probably within several months of planting, you'll probably never even look at them again. They'll just become background because they never change. And they're just a little mass there that says, okay, I planted something here and it's red and it will look just like a knockout rose is supposed to look. But some of you and more of you are going to experience these problems with the knockout roses. And there's not going to be an easy solution. Not all roses not all roses are susceptible to this disease. But some are.
And the knockout roses in particular can be. So we're going to have to be thinking about that as we move forward. And it's going to be one of those problems moving forward, too. So if you've, there it is. And I'm curious, how many of you have had problems with that rose rosette disease? How many of you have had problems with your knockout roses? I'm interested to hear from you. Feel free to give us a call this morning. We'll talk about it. 251-343-0106. Not every knockout rose out there has a problem, but some do. So there's the tax man. I don't know if I made a great case for the right rose or not, but it's something to think about. You know, it's an interesting question as to which roses are actually going to do the best here along the Gulf Coast. Our high humidity makes it very difficult to manage a lot of roses well. Our soils aren't great either for roses. There are certain things I would do for soils if I were going to be growing roses. It's almost like I would like to build a bed out of oyster shells, crushed oyster shells. And I think they would probably do better on that than they would do on our normal soils. We have a lot of problems with our with roses here in our climate. It's going to mean that we need to have certain types of rootstocks. Fortuniana, if I'm remember correctly, or Robert Fortune's rose rootstock, the rootstock of that rose needs to be the rootstock because it deals with our nematodes really well. It deals with our other disease problems in the soil pretty well. And so that's a better rose. We need a rootstock design for the South. So if you're buying your roses from places up north where they're not using rootstock like Fortune's rose rootstock, then you could be in a fix because the rootstocks of those other roses don't do so well down here. They don't do so well down here. Most of the rootstocks on the knockout roses seem to be pretty good, and they do so well here. But the tops of those plants are very susceptible to mites and other problems, and that's where you run into issues with those roses. Hey, let's talk a little bit about what we need to be getting going, folks. It is absolutely imperative that we begin now. It's almost too late, and I'm trying not to take this away from you, but it's getting to be too late to start tomatoes. It can be a big problem. At this point in the game, and particularly by February 15th, I would say this is the last weekend. This is the last weekend where I would feel really comfortable. If you live in Mobile, if you live in Fairhope, if you live in that band right there along the Gulf Coast, I would say this is your last weekend when you can start tomatoes from seed. This is it. Because each week you delay after this, you're delaying that tomato harvest deep into summer where things aren't going to do so well. For some people, and in fact, I would say for some people, if you can't get your tomatoes started by February 15th or February 20th, if you can't get those seeds started, I would just say wait and start them again in May. Start your tomatoes in May so that you'll have them and you can plant them out in late July or plant them in late June. Let them come up through that July heat. In August, they may perk up a little bit. And then you'll have them producing in fall. And that's probably a better time. May or June. June's probably even a better time for people along the Gulf Coast to start their tomatoes. So the two great tomato starting times on the Gulf Coast are January and June. There it is. Difficult to get them started and get them going and developed at other times. However, it's a great time now to begin starting to think about peppers. It's a great time to start thinking about eggplants. It's a great time to start your squash, if you'd like to start squash in containers or pots. I usually start mine from seed, and I start that seed in the garden. You remember, too, that when we're starting squash, I recommend using a squash that has a solid stem. Yellow squash doesn't, so it's very susceptible to squash vine borers here along the Gulf Coast. But squash like Korean ball squash and tromboncino, they have solid stems. They grow on vines, they can get pretty big, but boy, do they make a lot of fruit. And they're really good, they're really delicious. I think they taste better than yellow squash. So I would recommend that for the Gulf Coast. Lots of other things we need to begin doing. It's a great time to listen, petunias. It's almost too late for petunias. Petunias are actually weirdly closely related. They're very much like tomatoes, but they actually tolerate heat even less. But it's a fun time to start petunias from seeds. If you're going to start marigolds, go ahead and get them going now. Get them up and get them going. It can even be a good time to start zinnias. It's just because those zinnias are going to be ready to come out. They're going to start out a little bit slow during this cold spell, but that means you put them in the ground April, you got April, May, June, July, August. You may have 5 good months of zinnias before you need to replant them again. And some of them may even survive the summer. It's a good time to start on your zinnias, all types of zinnias, before that powdery mildew becomes a problem. And then we can try the dwarf zinnias as well. So it's a great time to start a lot of flower seeds as well. If you've got any questions about what those seeds are, give me a call. We'll talk about it this morning. We'll figure it out. 251-343-0106 is the number this morning. I hope you're out getting ready to enjoy the yard. Sounds like you may be. We'll help you through it if you need any help. You could actually, one of the things you can do is you're walking around the yard this morning and enjoying it. If you see something that doesn't make sense, see something you need information on, take a picture of it, send it to us. 251-343-0106. Black tarantula.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106. Rain on my
face. Hey, welcome back. It's a Gulf Coast Sunday morning with Plain Gardening. Hey, I've got some fun things to talk about this morning coming up. But Taxman, where are we on this? Where are we on these this knockout, slap out rose thing?
Well, I was visiting a friend east of Daphne at the headwaters of Fry Creek. He's got 7 acres over there.
Yeah.
And I was looking at his camellias. They're beautiful. They're all in the ground. But
yeah,
he grows vegetables and all kind of flowers in containers. He's got all kind of vegetables in containers. Anyway, we got over to his little rose garden, and I thought it said slap out, but it was really knockout. And they're small growing type. I call them a miniature. And then he's got a larger growing knockout rose. Anyway, he's got them in concrete containers.
Yeah.
And it caught my attention. I said, what kind of soil is that? He said, that is pure ground wood. No soil, no dirt at all. So I found that very, very interesting. Of course, the roses are dormant right now, but I can see, when you can look at a dormant plant and see what you have, you're pretty far along in the gardening world. You know what I mean?
That's right. That's right.
But anyway, I'm real, real interesting because he knows what he is doing. I don't need to reinvent the wheel. He's done reinvented it for me. So I'm going to keep my eyes on that, but I'm going to get me some of these knockout roses, though. I've heard of them and so forth, but I just don't know. I have to go online, I reckon, and get some information. But I want to let you know, though, he's growing those in pure ground wood. Not necessarily pine bark, but ground wood, you know?
Yeah, that's right. Well, that's and I know that some growers do use ground wood. And that can work if it's ground to the right fineness. And some growers do it. It can work. And particularly if the wood is rotten, and particularly if it's the right kind. I've grown plants in, you know, one of my favorite places to grow plants is basically in an old rotten tree stump or an old rotten tree log. I mean, they love it. They love growing into that. And they'll just grow right into that. And taxman, the only thing I'll say about the knockout roses is that some people are having a real hard time with the mites, and not everybody, but those mites are an issue, and it's become kind of a big issue, and they're very hard to deal with. The one thing I will say about knockout roses is they seem to be completely immune to the soil. You can grow them in any kind of soil, and they do fine. And I know this because I see them everywhere in every type of soil and with every type of care. So they're very tough where soil is concerned. But these mites could be a problem.
Yeah, well, anyway, I'm going to look into it, but we'll work on that too. But you've been real helpful, Bill, and thank you, and I'll keep you posted.
All right, thank you. Yeah, that's good. So this is, it's just a caution. But one of the things that happens is when you get a rose, when you get any plants, crepe myrtles, roses, live oaks, dogwoods, and suddenly everybody plants them, then every little thing that could go wrong suddenly is magnified manyfold. And we'll talk about that. We're going to talk about that this hour because it's really important. I was reading a story about a mushroom that's spreading around the globe and why it's spreading around the globe. And it's a very interesting story. It's a very poisonous mushroom, a very toxic mushroom. We're going to talk about that when we come back. Hey, but listen, I have another call. David, I'm listening. What's up?
This week, Bill. There's two different types of cottonseed mill. There's garden grade and seed grade cottonseed mill. So I was calling, I need a particular kind of cottonseed mill for my grass, or will any kind do?
You know, the difference between the seed, you know, there is a feed grade and a garden grade. It has a lot to do with essentially for your garden. No, there's no difference. It does make a difference. It may make a difference for the cows, but it doesn't make a difference for your garden. There is some difference in availability, but I find that any of the cottonseed meals I use, they all work just about the same. They all work just about as well. The difference, and I'll have to look into all the differences, but no, I wouldn't worry too much about what grade you buy. It's not worthwhile to buy a more expensive grade. I can tell you that. If you had a choice between the two, I would buy the least expensive. But there should be no other big difference otherwise.
All right. And my next question is, of course, I mulch with my lawnmower, the leaves and debris and stuff that's in the yard when I cut. Do I need to mulch the leaves that have fallen this winter before I put out the cottonseed mill, or do I need to put it on and then mulch, or just put it on and leave it?
You know, I certainly, because the leaves will tend to trap the cottonseed meal, and you probably want it to go ahead and get down into the soil so that it can get in there more evenly. It doesn't have to be extraordinarily precise, but I think I would mulch the leaves first and go ahead and crunch them up and then put the cottonseed meal down.
Thank you, sir. And I did end up with three different types of blueberry bushes, the Premier, the Climax, and then there was, I can't forget what the name of the third one was, but I ended up with five Premier, two Climax, and then one of the others.
Perfect. So Delight, maybe? Was it Delight or something like that?
Something blue.
You don't remember?
No, I don't remember.
Yeah. Yeah, but no, that's perfect. So one of the things that David is saying is when we get rabbit eye blueberries, which do the best for us, they're probably the best and most reliable, and they get really big. They're really wonderful. They'll get to be 12 feet tall if you keep them going long enough. There's lots of blueberries, and they taste really good. You need to buy two different named varieties. They're all part of the Rabbit Eye group, but they'll have different names. So David mentioned two, Premier and Climax. They work well together. They cross-pollinate each other. You need that for good cross-pollination. David, you did good. Thank you.
All right. Have a good one, Bill.
All right. Yeah, so, yeah, David, I'm listening. What's up?
Hey, Dave, Bill. Question, I got a couple of these Confederate roses. Do you cut those things down every year? And if so, when do you cut them and how low do you cut them?
So, well, that is up to you. Let me clear up real quick that a Confederate rose is not really a rose. It's a hibiscus, and it's a hibiscus from China. You kind of have to think of it as a hibiscus. It can be cut to the ground every year, and it can come back. If you like your, most people, a lot of people, like really tall, Confederate roses, the big tall, Chinese hibiscus. And that's okay. If you really want a high bush that's 8 feet tall, you can get it. If you want a lower bush, you can cut it to the ground every year and it'll come back as a small bush. I will tell you this. This is probably my preferred way of dealing with this hibiscus, which is Chinese. It's not, it actually refers to the, apparently to the Malaysian Confederacy, not to the Southern Confederacy, but to the Malaysian Confederacy. But the way I would handle that plant, looking at the fact that the stems don't last very long, is each year I would probably take out the one, two, or three biggest stems, the ones that are tallest. Each spring I would take them out. I would just take them out all the way to the ground, leave the smaller sprouts, the ones that are knee high, waist high, head high, leave them, but take out the ones that are really tall. Because I think they do well, they don't perform as well, they don't really do as well. So rather than cutting everything back to the ground, just cut the very tallest stems back to the ground. Does that make sense, David?
Well, a little bit. We bought this house about a year ago, so we cut them down last year. And these, you know, they came back, I mean, they are, you say an 8 foot tall, they are at least 8-9 foot tall. You know, they came, you know, they shoot right back up.
That's right.
And I noticed this morning that some of them are starting to get some green leaves on them. I don't know if this weather's kind of fooled them or not, but it looks like they're trying to come back. So if you don't cut them back, does that cause a problem?
No, it won't cause a problem if you don't cut them back. They're just fine. And some people like to keep them big. I will tell you that the old fat stems don't last that long. They'll last for a couple or 3 years before they begin to decline. So you always want to encourage some young stuff from the base to come up. And so that's why I'm saying, you know, I would just say each year, take out one. Why don't you do this? You like it tall, it sounds like. So each year, take out one of the tallest stems and let those younger stems come up so they'll have plenty of sunlight. Just take out one of the tallest stems each year. That would be my recommendation.
Okay. Now, I'm going to assume that the owner before us, because the base where, like, it had been cut back many times before, is a pretty big base. Where, you know, it was cut down basically to the ground, but some of those didn't come back to the same cut. Is that normal?
That is absolutely what's going to happen. That base is going to, there's a term for that. I won't use it out loud. It's called perinating. But it's a stoloniferous base. It's going to keep producing new stems out from around the crown. That crown gets larger and larger where the root base is, where the stems come up. So they won't come up from exactly the same place. They may come up from somewhere else in the crown. Sometimes, and I've frequently seen this happen with the Chinese hibiscus, I've seen people cut the main pod down and then about 6 feet away, boom, another stem comes up where a root had grown, and it will come come up on the root. That happening.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, it kind of looked like this baby has expanded over the years.
That's right. It should.
Okay.
It should. Right. It absolutely should.
Okay.
So it's doing exactly what they always do. And yeah, yeah. Good to hear from you, David. We're about to run out of time, aren't we, here for this session. So we'll hold on. Thomas, I'm going to be back here in just a minute, and we'll talk a little bit more about Knockout Rose. I'm interested to hear your thoughts on it. For a lot of people, it's been a great rose, and Taxman has really likes it, really, really impressive. Some of them do better than others. You just kind of want to think about that and figure it out, but we'll be back. Give us a call, 251-343-0106.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Hey, welcome back. It's a Gulf Coast Sunday morning with Plain Gardening. Let's come back to this discussion, David, about feed grade and garden grade cottonseed meal. What's interesting is that most of the, at least in my experience, most of the large bags of cottonseed meal that we get locally are actually feed grade cottonseed meal. This is cottonseed meal that's fed to cattle, fed to cows, to supplement their diet, to aid in weight gain. Not too surprising. Actually, if that seems weird, it shouldn't, because a lot of the oils we use in various, if you're eating potato chips or something like that, you're probably eating cottonseed oil. It was one of the major ingredients of a lot. It is still the major ingredient of a lot of processed foods. It is a cottonseed meal. Growing cotton, I know as well as anyone, perhaps better than most, requires a lot of chemicals. It's something we use a lot of chemicals on. It's an interesting question as to whether those chemicals show up in the cottonseed. I don't think a lot of them do. And that is my confidence in using that cottonseed. The chemicals can transfer through the plant, but compared to what you're getting from corn and other things, I don't think it's a serious issue. You're probably getting, I worry even now, given how we grow squash, that we're probably getting more chemicals through eating squash than we do particularly if it's grown here in the South. We probably get more chemicals from eating certain types of squash than we do from eating, from cottonseed oil. But you're worried, you might worry about it. The feed grade is generally the purest grade of cottonseed meal. It goes through more rigorous standards, more rigorous testing. So it's safer to use in your yard, arguably. If the other grades are not safe, this is safer. And I'm not sure that the other grades aren't just about as safe. But almost all the cottonseed meal you buy is going to be feed grade anyway, at least in my experience. So there's a story. We can talk more about it and what all this means and what it really means to you. Feel free to give me a call. Hey, Thomas, are you still on the line? Thank you, sir, for holding, if you are.
I'm still listening to you.
Good.
Hello?
Yeah. Can you hear me?
Okay. The tax man was talking about knockout roses.
Yes, sir.
And I can hardly hear you, Bill. We got a bad connection.
No, we're pretty good. We're pretty good.
Oh, okay. They're put out by Flowerwood Nurseries, the knockout roses. So if he looks up Flowerwood Nurseries, he'll get all the information. They come in red, pink, double red, double pink, white, in yellow, and cut them back. You're right, they can go in just about any dirt.
They're real hardy. They were developed with other plants from Taiwan, like the encore azaleas were. And these knockouts will bloom more than once a year. And if you use an Osmocote fertilizer, you can get them to be blooming just about year-round. It's amazing the amount of blooms they produce. And they're great for a hedgerow. And all I do is I like them about waist high when they get up about chest high. And every February 15th, when I cut back my crepe myrtles, I cut back, well, I don't cut them back. My wife cuts them back to about waist level. And that seems to be okay.
Yeah, that's right. Well, it's an interesting question as to how you should cut them back. I think that may not be the absolute best way, but the good thing about the good thing that you can say about those roses is almost anything you do to them, they survive. Yeah. So the one thing they don't survive is the disease that I talked about. That can make them look pretty ragged, but anything humans do to them, they usually survive really well. Flowerwood grows those under contract. They actually were developed in Australia, if I remember correctly. Or New Zealand or somewhere far away. The contract for those was issued to a number of nurseries. Flowerwood grows them under contract with the originators of Flowerwood, so they actually pay a license fee to grow those and sell them. So Flowerwood didn't create them. Yeah, that's right. And they grow them at Grand Bay under license with that company, yeah.
That's true. He also developed the Encore azaleas. They developed a different color. They're still coming out with new colors with the Encore azaleas.
Yeah, and that was actually
a breed among themselves, too.
Yeah, Buddy Lee in Louisiana developed those and did all the work on them. I know Buddy very well. He's an azalea expert from Louisiana, and he developed those, and then he gave the contract to Flowerwood. He licensed Flowerwood to grow them. So, so Flowerwood, yes, they didn't actually develop them, but they do grow them out and sell them. Buddy Lee in Louisiana developed those encores. He's a nice guy, really great guy. Developed them from azaleas in Taiwan. You're right, in Formosa and in the southern parts of actually. And if I'm remembering correctly, some of those may come even from other places besides Taiwan. But there are many crosses there that are part of that. Southern China was a tropical rose.
Well, I just thought I'd point Taxman in the right direction.
Yeah, that's right. And of course, you can't buy directly from Flowerwood, but those almost everybody now sells those roses, and Walmart and Home Depot, Lowe's, all of them have it usually under contract with Flowerwood.
And I think that they're working to get one of them back, one of those big box stores. And there's fellows, people that buy them. There's a fellow out on Bellingraph Road who sells them, too. He buys lots.
Well, that's right.
But you can buy them, but you can't you can't compete with the box stores.
Yeah. Yeah, I think Shore Acres may sell them as well. So you're right. You're right. Well, listen, Thomas, thank you for calling. That was it's good to talk to you. So a lot of people have had great success with those roses, and they're very popular now. The knockout roses and what's interesting, I'm curious. A lot of people have had good success with that reddish magenta red colored knockout, which is kind of the signature knockout, and the knockout that was the first. And perhaps the most successful. I've seen fewer and fewer of the other colors, the whites and the yellows. They don't seem to do quite as well. I'm curious, is that just, I'm just curious if that's still the case, if any of you have grown the other colored knockouts, and you find that they grow as well as the red ones? I can't answer that question. I could use your help doing that and figuring that out. Hey, we've gone through a lot of subjects this morning, as we always do. I'm going to come back to the cottonseed meal thing because David brought it up this morning, and it's a good time to follow up. I often recommend cottonseed meal because it's readily available. It's safe in terms of compared to most other fertilizers that we can purchase. It's relatively safe. It is easy to apply. It's not exorbitantly expensive. It makes sense. There's a certain efficiency in how it works. To me, the way cottonseed meal works makes it far less expensive than chemical fertilizers, which can be very sensitive to how they're applied and which may have to be applied more often and that you have to think about a lot. And the cottonseed meal makes a lot of sense. So we often recommend it. There are some people who have a very strict interpretation of organic gardening who don't like the cottonseed meal. We can come back and talk about their objections later. But boy, it's been a good hour. Let's have another good hour. Hey, walk around your yard, take some pictures of things you don't understand, send them in. Let's talk about them.